Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Grecian's Gossip. Joining me today is Stuart James and Jamie Hawkins, our podcast regulars. Good morning.
Hi, Jack.
Hi, Jack.
So another good week for Exeter City. They seem to not be able to stop winning at the moment. We'll start with the win against Cheltenham in League Two with you, Jamie, first of all. A game of two halves, it seems.
Yeah, it's a terrible cliche, isn't it? It's obviously, it's a game of two halves. But no, I mean, Exeter just didn't get going in the first half at all. I don't know what it was. It was so slow and sloppy from them. Obviously the conditions were awful, but you know, you can't make excuses for that. The pitch was still pretty superb. I mean, there were perhaps one or two doubts among supporters about the game going ahead, but when you turn up the ground, there was never any doubts as to, you know, if it was going ahead or not. But yeah, it's just really slow. It was strange how, you know, obviously Exeter picked up form lately, got back to winning ways and scoring, you know, goals for fun. So it was interesting. Cheltenham sort of set up with a game plan to get Exeter on the counter attack, and they did look really threatening when going forward, and a bit of a comical goal to concede when Martin sort of tried to clear the ball. Moxie got in the way, and obviously they get in, and the guy has a simple tap in. But I don't know, I was saying to Stu before we came on, even at half time, I was never in doubt in my mind that City would come back to win, because I've got the feeling that once you could attack Cheltenham and break their defence down, they could cause problems. And that showed in the second half. Obviously Taylor changed it up formation wise and tactic wise, which paid dividends and scored some good goals. The second goal particularly, when Boateng Law played a brilliant ball to Boateng to feed him through, and then crossed it across to Stockley, finished well. And Jonathan Fort making a welcome return back from injury, scored a good goal, and obviously got a brace against West Ham. So yeah, it was another good win.
Cracking goal from Sweeney as well, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, goal of the month, surely. Just, I was right behind it and just knew as soon as he hit it, it was going to go in. Brilliant half volley.
It's always good as well if you can come back from behind as well. They didn't need to do that against West Ham, Stu. You were there covering that game in the Checker Trade Trophy. I know not every fan enjoys that competition, but a win nonetheless against West Ham's under-21s.
Yeah, it was a funny old night, really, because, as you say, not many fans go to these games, and there was another boycott going on, so it was a really, really quiet St James's Park, and I think there was only about 1,100 fans there. It was just a routine win, really. It was just such a comfortable win for City. I just thought their game management, given that they're such a young team, you know, City put out a really young team against a very young West Ham team, but City were just so in control. The experienced players really played their part. I thought Lee Martin looked a threat all night. John Fort scored two cracking goals, the second one especially. I mean, Jamie and I were watching it before we came on to do the podcast. It's such a good header. You know, the technique he showed to sort of flick the ball when he's got his back to goal, to flick it over the goalkeeper's head and into the far corner, really was exquisite, I thought.
But the result wasn't the biggest talking point of the game, was it? It was a floodlight failure.
I know. It's happened a few times at City. It's funny, actually, because we're going to speak to Alan Tong in a bit. And I remember a game back in the 90s that Alan played in, and there was a floodlight failure then. And it was very similar because some of the lights went out, so there was a little bit of sort of gloom. But the game was able to continue. But then two or three minutes later, there was, you know, a sort of complete blackout. About three quarters to, you know, maybe even more than that, most of the lights had gone out, and the referee had no option but to take the players off the pitch. And
how much injury time was given?
Well, that was a funny thing, because on the stroke of half time, of course, the board goes up, and the fourth official put up 27 minutes, which is certainly a record high for me, that's for sure.
It's got to be a record.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, before we discuss Exeter's upcoming game at Port Vale, Stu obviously caught up with former Grecian Alan Tong. Here's what he had to say.
Okay, so I am joined on the phone now by former Exeter midfielder Alan Tong. Hi, Alan.
Hi, Stuart. How are you doing? You okay?
Yeah, very well, thank you. I've been speaking to the lads lots about this and saying about what a hero of mine you were as a youngster, because being a big Man United fan as well, you obviously joined Exeter from the Red Devils, didn't you?
Yeah, That's right. I going back a number of years now. So typical journey, like a lot of young footballers. Came through the schoolboy system. Got scouted by United at a young age. Got invited into train on a Monday and a Thursday night, as it was back then. And that eventually led to me getting offered a schoolboy form and an apprenticeship with them. So did quite well in my apprenticeship, Stuart, and got the opportunity to sign a professional contract. And then, unfortunately, at the end of my professional contract, it kind of wasn't renewed. I wasn't sort of making the strides that I thought I might be doing and knocking on the first team door. And it was sadly time to look for something else, look for another opportunity a bit lower down.
Yeah, indeed. Were you ever close to playing for the first team at Old Trafford?
Well, I had an opportunity to play with him, Stuart, in a couple of friendlies. We had a player back then called Giuliano Maiorana. He was a very talented left winger.
Yeah.
And as part of the arrangement for Giuliano coming to Man United, United said they'd send a team down to Histon, which was the sort of non-league club that he'd came from. So I was involved with that. Also been involved in a couple of other sort of first team friendlies as well against different clubs. So I was kind of on the verge, Stuart, but not quite in there on a regular basis. More in the reserve, really.
Yeah, it's funny hearing you talk about Histon, because that brings back memories of Exeter and our non-league days, because they were opponents of ours back in the conference.
Yeah, that's right.
So, as you say, though, you were released from United and your next move was Exeter. I mean, how did that come about? That must have been a hell of a change of scenery for you, because, you know, obviously being a Manchester lad and what have you.
Absolutely. Well, it was funny, because when I was a first-year apprentice at Man United, I must have been, you know, doing something quite well, because I got chosen to represent the Football League 11. We travelled to Moscow to play a Russian Football League 11 in a sort of like a special game, like a centenary game. I think it was for like the Russian Football League, was a certain 100 years old, something like that. Anyway, the managers of the party that took us on that was Alan Ball and Laurie McMenemy.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, anyway, it was a really, really good experience. We managed to win 2-1, and I actually captained the Football League side.
All right.
And changed, you know, a few players in there who went on to have reasonable football careers. A lad called Paul Kitson, who was a centre forward. I think he played with Newcastle and Derby County.
Yeah, I remember him.
I think we had another lad called Joey Beauchamp, who had quite a good career, I think, with a couple of lower league teams. I think Oxford United was one. I think he started at Liverpool as a youngster. So there was a few players dotted in there who went on to have reasonable careers. So that was a really good experience. So when I got released from United, the opportunity arose where we got in contact with Exeter, because Morley was the manager there, and he said, "Oh, come down and we'll have a look at you."
Yeah, and as I say though, I mean, it was a big move for you, being a Manchester boy and coming all the way to the West Country. You must have found it a bit of a culture shock.
Well, it was, because I was only 19 at the time. So
yeah.
It was kind of like, I think it's about, my dad, I remember my dad putting a map together for me, because I only had a little Ford Fiesta at the time, and it's like you say, Stuart, it was quite a fair journey down there. It took me about 4 hours drive, something like that. And you feel as though you're driving to sort of the end of nowhere, but, I managed to do okay, and it was tough, because you're almost playing for your life, as it were, because I was trying to resurrect my career again.
Yeah.
But, after a period of time, they offered me a contract, and my career started moving again.
Yeah, so what did you do when you came down? Did you move in with like a load of other lads, or how did it work out?
When I first came down to Exeter, there was like digs there, you know, like about five or six players in those digs. I think there was like a couple of lads who were sort of, you know, early 20s or who'd not had the sort of the funds or whatever at that stage of their career to actually purchase a house of their own. So it was quite interesting, really. I can remember about six or seven players being in this particular dig. So, you know, it was a difficult time, as it were, but quite an important time and sort of developing my character and making me grow up a little bit, Stuart, really.
Yeah, first time away from home and all of that, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah, yeah. That's correct.
So who did you share with? Can we get any names or?
Yeah, I was John Hodge was in the digs at the time. We had a big goalkeeper, Kev Miller. Kev was in the digs. A couple of young lads called Damien Cooper and Graham Waters. And then we had another lad in there called Tony Franklin, who was like a young centre-half.
Yeah.
So like I say, about five or six lads in this particular house who sort of shared the digs.
Yeah, all young lads and enjoying the excellent nightlife, no doubt, as well.
Yeah. He was calling me, and I remember one of those places and places on the quay side as well.
Yeah, that's right. Boxes, warehouse. Hothouse.
Yeah.
We had John Hodge on the show last week, funnily enough, and he was great. Came up with some fantastic stories and told us about Alan Ball and what have you. What were your memories of Alan Ball? Because he was such a massive name for somebody like Exeter as well at the time.
Yeah, he was. You know, obviously he had an unbelievable playing career, and he managed to, you know, win the World Cup with England, which was incredible, really, because I think Alan had he suffered a bit of a knockback at 16 years old. I think Bolton Wanderers told him he was too small, and then he was in the World Cup winning squad at 21 years old. So 5 seasons later, you know, it just goes to show you should never give up and always keep battling and fighting away. But Paulie was a very passionate character. He was a really good man, very, very similar to Alec Ferguson, really, Stuart. He was very, very hell-bent on winning. You know, I know he Exeter City, you kind of say, well, you know, what's the likelihood of Exeter winning every week? But that's what he set up his teams to do, and that's what he strived to do. You know, his training sessions were really good. They were always based on passing and movement and control. So he was a football man, and he set his teams up to play football, which was really nice, because sometimes when you go down the divisions, you may end up with a manager who just wants to play long football all the time and bouncing the ball off clouds to get it in the box. So it was quite a nice thing that Morley decided to set his teams up to play the right way.
Indeed, and speaking to Hodgie again, you know, from last week, and he said what a good team Exeter had at that time, you know, with the likes of Stevie Williams in midfield, Eamon Collins, Hodgie on the wing,
absolutely.
Jeppo Morano at front. It was a hell of a team, really, for that level.
It was, because I think Bowley brought a lot of players with him from Southampton and lads who had been associated with Stuart, like you say, Stevie Moran, Stevie Williams, established pros, you know, like lads who have had good careers at high levels. I remember going down and having, I think Vince Allaire was there for a spell.
That's
Vince
right, yeah.
Was a very, very talented player with Crystal Palace. I think he got England caps early on in his career. So, yeah, some fantastic pros to really learn from, and, you know, that really helped me settle down and push on with my career.
Yeah, absolutely. What about your highlights of your time at Exeter?
Well, my particular highlight, Stuart, got to be the Boxing Day win over the Germans. I think that was a brilliant occasion. I can remember it being an early kick-off. I think it was something like half 11 kick-off because of the crowd situation. And it was one of them games that sort of everything seemed to go right for Exeter. So we won 2-0 in the end, as you can recall. And I think we had 3 goals disallowed as well. And to get those goals past Peter Shilton was quite a really nice thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm right in thinking you were man of the match in that game, weren't you?
I did really well in that game. I managed to get a man of the match award, and I set the first goal up for Peter Whiston as well. A nice cross into the box, which is great. So, yeah, that particular story of that day, Stuart, was Bowler gave me a marking job on Warren Joyce.
Yeah.
He told me that, you know, he'd looked at Warren before as a manager for Stoke City, and, you know, he tried to sign him a couple of times. And he said Warren was their danger man. A lot of play tended to go through him. So he said to me, like, call me in on the Thursday and said, that's your job for Saturday morning, is just to follow him everywhere and snap at his ankles and get your tackles in and make sure that he doesn't do anything. And that was the task. And fortunately, I managed to carry it out quite well and roughed him up a little bit that day. And we, like I say, we come away with the 3 points and 1-2-0.
Yeah, well, you must have broken away from the shackles at some stage to put the cross in for Peter Weston as well.
Yeah. Well, that's it. I think like boys, you know, keep your eye on Warren Joyce when they've got possession.
Yeah.
But when we sort of get it back, go and join in and go and play, you know, and go and get on the ball. I think it was a corner that it come through, a short corner, and it come back to me, and I managed to sort of bend it in from the old cow shed side. And Peter Whiston edited it in, and that was at like the away supporters end as well, which was nice. So yeah, great memories, Stuart. Fantastic memories.
Yeah, had you worked on set pieces in the build-up to that game? Because I remember Scott Daniels scored the second goal as well, and that came from a corner kick as well.
He did, yeah. Bowler used to look at on Friday mornings. He would like sit in the training ground at the camp fiddle there in the sort of set pieces, have a look at who's doing what, free kicks, corners, etc. So we might have had a look at that, you know, because like I say, I think a lot of goals can come from set pieces, as we've seen in the World Cup with England. You know, we were dangerous off them sort of things, corners, because we had some decent lads who could head the ball, like Peter Whiston, Scotty Daniels, you know, lads who could get in, Jeffo, yeah, could put the red in and score a goal for you.
Yeah, absolutely. What about your other memories? Obviously, later on that season, we went down to Home Park and won 3-0, but I can't remember if you were involved that day or not.
Yeah, I don't think I was involved that day. I managed to go down there and play in an autograph trophy. That's probably the other strong memory of my time there, Stuart, and that would be, we had a good run in the autograph trophy, and managed, we was only like one game away from Wembley, unfortunately.
That's right,
and it
yeah.
didn't quite work out. And I think we played Plymouth, Reading, Brighton on our run. I think we drew Port Vale in the sort of semi.
That's right. Yeah.
Went up to their place. I think if my memory serves me right, I think it was 2-1 to Port Vale at Vale Park.
That's right. I remember Danny Bailey scored an absolute rocket
Danny
from
Bailey
about 30 yards.
He did. So we nicked an away goal, and then we came to the second leg at St James's. We went 1-0, Stuart, for most of that game.
Yeah, I remember that.
We could see the Twin Towers. The Twin Towers were inside.
Do you remember who scored the goal?
Was it Stuart Storer?
No, it was Jason Minnette.
Jason Minnette, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So Jason put us 1-0, so we would have gone through on away goals.
Yeah.
And then I think it was Bernie Slaven.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it was Bernie Slaven.
Was it Bernie Slaven who slotted on for Vale to make it 1-0? And he put them through, didn't he? Was it 3-2 on aggregate?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so to be cut so cold yet so far, that was probably like one of the highlights going on the run, because we only had a relatively young side. I think.
Yeah.
If you look at all the descriptions of the game and the reports of the game back then, I think the average age at Brighton away was something like 21, and Bowley said, you know, we had like a group of young players and only one person cost us a fee in that side and things like that. So,
yeah.
But to go away from home and get results was, you know, he was really pleased with that.
Yeah.
And like I said, just disappointed we couldn't see it through and get a Wembley appearance.
Yeah, that's right. But when you look back at the squad at that time, I guess that's, I mean, Hodgie speaks about it as well. And he says the problem was probably that there wasn't the depth. You know, you had a good sort of 1 to 11, but then after that, you were sort of struggling, really.
Yeah, well, I remember once, Stuart, we had that. You know, is it the Express and Echo? Is that still your local paper down there?
Yes, it is, yeah.
Yeah, there was an article on the back of that that said something like emergency cell block 8 had about 12 players injured.
Really?
So, yeah, and it's like to say because of the squad back then were quite threadbare because of the financial situation. So there wasn't a lot of money floating around back then. It put quite a lot of pressure on and, you know, in a good way, because sometimes young players have to be given their head maybe sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
So, you know, we had a couple of good youngsters breaking through, like Martin Phillips.
Yeah, Buster.
Stands out as one particular player who was talented. And, you know, Martin was coming into the team at 18, 19, getting his chance. So, it was, you know, like I say, good memories and good times.
Yeah, absolutely. But the sad thing was, obviously, you picked up this back injury, which ultimately led to you having to retire, didn't it?
It did, unfortunately. It was a real sad time. I don't know, for some reason I started getting pins and needles in my feet and my back and my legs. And so what I did stupidly, I kept playing for a while thinking it had died down because, you know, in the lower leagues, all you get is like short-term contracts.
Yeah.
And my contract was running out and I thought, well, I'm going to have to keep going here because I can't really afford to be out too long because I've got to try and get visible back in the first team again. So I really played with that for maybe longer than I should have done, maybe about a month before I reported it to Mickey Chapman, who was our physio back then.
Yeah.
They sent me for an MRI scan, and the next thing you know, they were in touch with Fred Tate Hospital, and they had to go and have surgery. They had to go and have a spinal surgery, and like I say, it was two serious operations that I had. I had screws and plates inserted in the bottom of my spine. I was only 22. And although I tried to rehabilitate and recover, I was never the same again. So about 18 months later, Stuart, I decided to between myself and the surgeon, to say, you know, sadly, it's time to call. My professional days are coming to an end.
Yeah, were you still at Exeter at the time?
Still at Exeter at the time. And, you know, incredibly, after I finished at Exeter, professional football level, I did manage to play again. I did come back and play with a couple of non-league sides. One was called Elmore,
and one
was called Cliss Rovers.
Yeah.
And I had a season or two with them, but I wasn't the same mentally. I think that I was petrified of getting a knee in the back or something like that. You know, if you went up for a header or...
Yeah.
So I kind of wasn't 100%. I was playing at 70%. And after a couple of seasons, I thought, it's really time, Stuart, just to knock football on the head, really, and think about doing something else.
Yeah, but you stayed in the region. You know, obviously you're back in Manchester now, but you stayed down for a bit after you retired then.
Yeah, I stayed in the region for a little while. And then after a bit, because my football had finished and because I didn't really have a lot of... Well, I had no family down there, so I thought that the best thing to do really was head back up north again. And I think it was about 1997, 98 or something. We headed back up to Bolton to live for a bit.
Yeah, so when was the last time you went to St James's Park?
Last time I was at St James's, Stuart, to be honest with you. Never been back since the last.
Really?
And the last time I was at St James's, Stuart, you're probably looking about 95, something like that, 94, 95. I've never been back in 23 years. So... I keep saying to you on social media, I will come down. Because it was a time of my life. I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the people. I enjoyed everything about Exeter. A beautiful place to live. And I would definitely come back one day to revisit some of these memories I have as well. And maybe go and have a look around the training ground and catch a first team game. Sure, that would be fantastic.
Absolutely. I'm going to hold you to that one.
Yeah.
As you say, we've been talking about it for a while, so it would be good to have you down. I know that there's a lot of people that would love to hear some of your anecdotes and what have you as well.
That'd be great. That'd be brilliant.
So what are you up to these days then, Alan?
Yeah, well, what I did after my playing career came to an end, I sort of went into a couple of different jobs. I was working in a warehouse for a bit, and I was driving some vans, and I think I did a little bit of work for the Royal Mail, and it's just a bit lost, I suppose. After the football career had finished, I got probably lost for a couple of years and wasn't too sure what I wanted to do next. And I don't know, for some reason, I just started re-engaging my education again. So I went back to university when I was 28 to do a sports science degree. And then from that, I did a PGCE, which is like a teacher training qualification, because I enjoyed some of the lectures that I had, and I thought to myself, I could maybe see myself doing that. So I'd done my teacher training qual, and I got a job pretty quickly as a lecturer when I come out of my PGCE. So I finished my PGCE about the July time, and then I started a role as a lecturer about August the 20th. And since then, that's what I've been doing. I've been teaching for nearly 15 years now, mainly in higher education, and delivering degree provision for sports coaches, sports science students. So that's kind of where my career went. I've become a teacher.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to hear you talk about the sport coaching qualifications you've taken there, because I'm not sure how much you follow Exeter these days, but the manager, Matt Taylor, he went down a similar sort of path in terms of his coaching qualifications.
It's important because it's like some of the stuff I'm doing. I'm still doing a bit of active research at the moment, and we're looking at something called transitions and players who have to come out of football, you know, like what do they do next and how does that affect their mental health, and it's quite an important area at the moment, and I'm glad to see, Stuart, that quite a lot of players are opening up recently and talking about their issues, which is brilliant to see, because it shines more light and it gives us more understanding of what players are going through and people as well in the environments that we live in.
Yeah, have you spoken to Robbie Simpson at all?
I've spoken to Robbie briefly in relation to the life after professional sport.
Yeah.
So I said to Robbie, you know, if there's any guest talks or anything I can help with in his particular business, please feel free to give me a shout. And he said if there's anything in Manchester or the surrounding areas that he'll drop us an email or try to get me involved somewhere, which is again is fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. Because of course Robbie was with Exeter until the end of last season, and he's up with Portishead now, up at MK Dons. So,
yes,
fantastic. Yes. Well, that's great to hear, Alan. Just for the listeners out there, I did set you a challenge last week, didn't I, of coming up with your best team of players that you played with. The challenge was 5 from United and 5 from Exeter, including yourself. No prizes for guessing who the manager is. It's got to be Alan Ball, of course.
It's difficult. It's either Ball or Fergie.
Well, it's a tough one, that one. So who would you go for, Bally or Fergie?
That's a tough one, isn't it? Because I think Fergie was for his dominance of football, but it all started after I left, so I've got to factor that in. I've got to factor in the fact that Bally gave me a chance as well to get myself back in elite football, so I'm going to stick Bally in as the manager, I think, for this particular side.
Oh, right, okay. So what was more fearful, the Alex Ferguson hairdryer or the Alan Ball flat cap being thrown across the dressing room?
both absolutely ridiculous when they lost the chance to Stuart. Absolutely, mad, mental. You know, both winners, both passionate. If they're not seeing what they want to see, they will let you know in no uncertain terms. Believe you me.
Hairdryer
and my ball, he used to absolutely go ballistic as well, because they set high standards and expect you to live up to them. That's the fact of the matter. And if they don't, you incur their wrath.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, go on then, Alan. Crack on, let's hear your team.
Okay, so I've gone for goalkeeper, the big corner's been Kev Miller. Really, really strong keeper, Kev. Big lads. Kev was one of those who was really good with his feet, and any balls that got knocked back to him, he could, like, knock him 60, 70 yards. So, and that's when the sort of, the type of goalkeeper that were usually was good with the feet was just coming into prominence about 93, 94 times. So Kev's gone in goal. Difficult choice, too, because I could have gone with Les Seeley. I played with Gary Walsh, I played with Mark Bosnick, and I also played with Nicky Pollitt, who had a fantastic career in football. Nicky was still in goal at about 40 years old, but just because we've got a big 5 from each sort of area, United and Exeter, I've gone for big Kev to fill the goalkeeping spot. The fullback, I've gone for Scotty Eiley. Scotty was a fantastic fullback, stood out at Exeter, really good player. I think he got a good move. Did he go to Birmingham, Stuart, from Exeter?
That's right, yeah, he did.
So it was about $250,000, something like that. So I've got Scotty in there, and Scotty has the YouTube clip of the century done by Megan, Cristiano Ronaldo.
He does indeed. You know.
again, difficult choice, because I could have gone with Viv Anderson, who I played with. He's a great footballer. Lee Martin, superb player. Mickey Duxbury as well, like going back a number of years. They're all great players, but to fill the 5 and 5, I've gone with Scotty at fullback.
Okay.
Left fullback, I've gone for the old sparring partner called Davy Mad Dog Cooper.
Okay.
Honest lad, Dave. Great lad, great player. Always give 100%. Good tackler, good left foot. Again, tough choice. I could have gone with Andy Cox. I could have gone with Dennis Irwin. I could have gone with Clayton Blackmore. All fantastic footballers. But because he's my sparring partner, because he was my best friend at the time, we spent a lot of time together, I've gone with my sidekick, Dave Cooper, at left back.
I'm sure he'll be delighted to hear that as well.
He will. I'm going to message him in a bit and say, you've made my team. And I'll put the team on social media as well, so he can reach all your ourselves.
Brilliant.
Okay, the first centre-half I've put for Big Paul McGrath, so I've brought a United player in here now.
Yep.
Paul was a Rolls Royce of a football player. Absolutely brilliant. Read the game well. Incurred the wrath of Fergie a little bit. I don't know if you remember back then, it was like a sort of drinking cult with himself and Norman and Robbo.
And Kevin Moran.
Great lad. Great memories of Paul McGrath, an absolutely beautiful human being. He'd help anybody. Very, very humble. So Paul's gone is one of my centre-halves. Accompanied Paul, I've gone for the lad who scored the winner, one of the goals against Plymouth, Peter Whiston. Peter Whiston again, solid player, big lad, good skill for a big lad. He could bring the ball out from the back, he was a good passer, intelligent player. So I plumped for Pete Whiston and Paul McGrath as my centre backs.
Okay.
Okay, on the right wing, I've gone for Stuart Dora. Stuart was a good player, he comes from. I think he was a youngster at Bolton Wanderers. I played against him when I was at United A team and youth teams, and if I was left back and Stuart was on the right wing, Stuart had always caused me problems. He was very quick, hard to deal with. Again, difficult to choose because I played with a lad called Edie Doherty, who Oliver Cage just wrote a book about a year or two ago, called Forever Young. Edie was a fantastic player. He sadly lost his life as a young lad. I think it was about 27th birthday, something like that. A real sad tale. But he was a smashing little footballer. I also could have gone with Andre Kamtelski and Johnny Hodge as well, who you spoke to a couple of weeks ago. Johnny was a good little winger. Could beat a full back. He could get his crosses in. You know, a little speed, only small, but very, very speedy. So, yeah. But I've plumped for Stuart Storer on the right wing.
Okay, Hodgie won't be happy. You know, Hodgie won't be happy about that.
I know, it's difficult because I'm trying to balance everything up.
We'll put him on the bench, shall we?
we'll give you half a game each for Stuart Storer. Okay, set to the park. I've gone for myself alongside Brian, my hero, Brian Robson. Rob Lowe was, I've said it over social media before today, an absolute supreme footballer, Rob Lowe. He could do everything. He could pass. He could control. He could score goals. He could head. He could tackle. He was a leader of men. He was courageous. Everything. I think you talk about players, professional players. You say, could he do everything? And Rob Moore was one of those lads that could.
Yeah.
I can't speak highly enough of Brian Robson, an unbelievable player.
Yeah,
challenging Rob Moore for that central midfield spot. I had Ruffell Coughlin in there again, excellent little footballer. Dan, one of the St James's Park favourites, Danny Bailey of years gone by. You know, Danny was a good player as well, strong, good passer, great attitude. He was sort of up for consideration, and he also had little Gordon Strachan in there as well. And Gordon used to sort of play on the right side, but he could play in the centre midfield again, and he was a super little footballer. So it was a tough one, but I've gone for me and Robbo in the centre.
Yeah, just a word on Robbo. I mean, obviously you're a massive United fan as well as an ex-player, Alan. When you see Paul Pogba, it must drive you crazy. Man, I'm like you. Robbo was my hero growing up as a child. I used to love Robbo. And when I see Pogba, I just get so infuriated by him. And I can understand where Jose Mourinho is coming from with his lack of discipline.
Yeah. It is. It's very disappointed at the moment. You think, we're talking to my mate before, and we were saying about Pogba wouldn't have got away with this during dressing rooms of past.
No.
Roy Keane would have had him, or Fergie would have had something to say, or Robbo would have had something to say, or Peter Schmeichel would have had a go at him, or Brucey would have had a go at him. He wouldn't have been allowed to do this. And I think what worries me at the moment is Man United's situation is the lack of leadership in that dressing room. They all seem to be looking at each other for sort of inspiration. Nobody's taking the bull by the horns here, and there seems to be a loss of control, so that I think that's something that Mourinho has got to really, really try and address as soon as possible, or else it's going to be carnage here. There'll be players wanting to leave. There'll be players not performing. There'll be players who don't seem interested. So he's got to try and nail this down as quick as he can and try and get these results coming again.
Absolutely. Okay, back to the team then, Alan. Left wing.
Okay, so the left winger, I've got Giggsy's got the spot on the left wing, Ryan Giggs. Unbelievable player, Ryan. Remember him as a 13-year-old, first time I saw him. Eric Harrison came over and said, this lad's going to be some player. It didn't mean a lot to me at the time, Stuart, because, you know, at the end of the day, I was only 14, 15 years old, so, saying someone's going to be brilliant, it didn't mean a lot, but came through the youth teams with Ryan and phenomenal footballer. Didn't carry any condition, no weight on the lad, but when he got the ball and his pace and his dribbling skills, and he could score goals, he could create goals, and one of the greatest players that United have ever had. And you just look at his professional record and his appearances and the amount of trophies that he's won. And he is a legend of Premier League football, but one of the best around. Giggsy, a great player.
Yeah.
So up for grabs in that spot, I have little Martin Phillips, Giuliano Majorana, who was a very, very skillful left winger. I had Link Sharp there as well, who was a good winger, Sharpie. But Sharpie was used to flip between left fullback and left wing. He was a left back when he first started, but he ended up going forward more. But, Sharpie was a top player, scored goals, strong. Well, maybe Giggsy's emergence maybe sort of put Sharpie under a bit of pressure a bit. And Giggsy won the argument on that one.
Yeah.
Okay, my two centre forwards to finish off my 11. First one, big Norman Whiteside. Norman, fantastic centre forward. Great left foot. Confident. Temperament was fantastic. Great touch. The thing with Norman is he always had plenty of time on the ball. You know, even in tight training sessions.
Yeah.
Pop the ball into Norman and he always seems one of those players who seems to sort of, he had time to look up and make his decisions. I think his brain was fantastic, very, very quick and aware. I think Eric Harrison said to you, one of the best youngsters he's ever worked with, Norman. Once he told him something, it stuck. And yeah. he wouldn't make the same mistake again. So as you're a youngster coming through into the first team, that's a fantastic trait to have. And, Norman, unfortunately, did some unbelievable things as a young kid. Youngest player to play in the World Cup, scoring goals in FA Cup finals, Milk Cup finals, only 17 years old.
Yeah.
And then, injury troubles kicked in, and, I think Norman's a pack in about 26 years old, which is a shame because, he's another one who could have had 500, 600 appearances at Man United. And he's a legend there, but I think Norman will tell you himself he maybe could have done a bit more, but due to injury, sadly, his career was cut short.
Yeah.
So, up for grabs against Norman was Jeppo, Ronnie Jepson, a real character. I think he arrived to Exeter. I'm not sure if it was Preston. Was it Preston we got him from?
Yeah, it could have been. Preston or Port Vale, one of those two, I think.
Yes. Now, Jeppo was a real character. Big lad, good target man, held the ball up, scored goals. But a real character in the dressing room, Jeppo. And he was one of those lads who, you blocked in the trenches too if he was going to win. And another centre forward that was up for grabs as well there was Stevie Moran. Like we said before, Borley brought him in with Steve Williams, and Stevie Moran was a great little centre forward, fantastic finisher. In training he used to finish for fun, but I think he was coming to the end of his career when he was at Exeter, and it was kind of slowing down a little bit, but you could still see the quality.
Yeah.
And the final choice, you pick partner in Norman up front, I've gone with Mark Hughes, who I played with at Liston. He was in the team when I kind of had a little dust on the first team, knock on the first team door. Unbelievable, a bit like Jeppo, strong target man. Hold the ball up, score goals, good header of the ball. Again, a very, very quiet, shy almost man, but when he come onto the pitch like a raging bull. When he went to Barcelona, the fans nicknamed him El Toro, the bull, because he was an absolute solid lad, man.
Yeah.
And a great centre forward at Man United. But, because he's gone to City as a manager, I think a few of the United fans fell out with him a little bit. But, as a youngster, if you watch some of the clips on YouTube when he broke into the team and some of the goals he scored, fantastic player.
Absolutely.
Just challenging Mark there for that spot. We had, like, Mark Robinson again. great goal scorer, Mark. He got his chance in the first team. Arguably the lad who saved Sir Alex's job at Notts Forest in the sort of the cup run of the '90s. But Mark was a really good goal scorer. He went on to have a decent career. I think he went to Norwich, manager at Coventry at the moment, and he was very decent footballer. And he also had Brian McClare as well. Brian was a great centre forward. First player to score 30 goals, over 30 goals since Best, I think, when he arrived at United for the Celtic. And just a very, very good professional, Brian McClare. Always reliable and a very decent footballer indeed. So that's my 11, Stuart. That's my 1-11 that I've kind of put together out of the lads that I played with at United via the Houston Reds and the knock on the first team door. And the lads that I played with at Exeter, predominantly in the first team.
Yeah, it's a fantastic team. I like the look of it. Good balance to it as well.
Yeah.
And a lot of those Exeter players you mentioned, of course, did actually go on and play higher. You look at Kevin Miller, Scott Hiley, Peter Whiston. You know, they all went on to play in the Premier League.
They did, and I think Martin Phillips got a decent move as well.
He did.
He followed ball into Man City.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, they did good and like decent fees for him at the time, Stu, as well.
Absolutely. Well, Buster saved the club, didn't he? That move up to Man City. I'm not sure if you remember, but that money that City got for him effectively saved the club from going bust. So
yeah, fantastic. So a good bit of business from a young kid coming through the system.
Absolutely. Right. Well, Alan, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Thanks ever so much for joining me on the podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, thank you, Stuart. It's been great to come on and discuss some things, Man United and Exeter City. Some great memories there.
So that was Alan Tong speaking to Stuart. Did you enjoy that catch-up, Stu?
Yeah, I did. I just love speaking to the old players. I love hearing all the old anecdotes and speaking to Alan there and hearing about the players that he played with and his memories of his time at Exeter. It's sad, really, that he's not been back since his playing days were obviously cut short, really. Prematurely, he was only 24 when he had to retire through a really, really nasty spinal injury. So, it was great to catch up with him. Nice to hear what you had to say.
And good to hear about his mixed team between United and Exeter as well.
Yeah, that would be some team. I'd love to see that in action, that's for sure.
I'm sure a lot of managers would.
Yeah.
So, quickly, just before we end this podcast, Port Vale away, next up. The momentum with the Cheltenham game and the West Ham result, even though it's in the Chequers Trophy, it keeps that momentum going. What are we thinking about this game on Saturday?
Feeling pretty confident. I think, Port Vale with... come into form lately, actually. They've won the last two in a row. They've been quite hit and miss so far this season, but I think for Exeter it's got to be looking at 3 points, I think, if they want to maintain a good promotion challenge. Playing really well at the moment, scored lots of goals, as we've just said. So for me, I'd be looking at all 3 points.
Sure, is there any pressure to try and keep up with the likes of Lincoln who are up there? Is there pressure this early on in the season?
I think it's just pressure that the players are putting on themselves. I think if you spoke to any fan in pre-season, they would have said, mid-table, it's a period of transition with, so many changes with Matt Taylor and the coaching team. But when you're up there, you just want to keep it going, don't you? I mean, City were in a similar situation last year, and it was around this sort of time where we started to get a few injuries and tailed away a little bit. So I'm sure the players will remember that only too well.
Yeah.
As Jamie said there, the good thing is that they're winning. Not only did they win the league game against Cheltenham, but then to go into the West Ham game and make 9 changes and continue that winning form, it's great that the whole squad are all winning games at the moment.
Matt Taylor's certainly not going to know what all these managers are moaning about. He's taken to it quite well so far.
Yeah, he just seems a natural. I mean, I know Matt gets a little bit irked if you say, management's easy, because he knows only too well that it's not easy. But fair play to him, he's a rookie manager, he's learning his trade, but he's really impressed everyone so far.
And the more points you can rack up now, if you do have that dip, then it just keeps you in that lofty position. Well, thanks to both of you for joining us, and thanks to Alan Tong, who obviously you spoke to, Stu. We'll be back next week to look back on the game against Port Vale.